Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Get Wrecked, the only podcast anywhere in the world where two buds take turns recommending and reviewing some of their favorite pop culture hits, hidden gems, and oddities. I'm, of course, your host and resident silly boy Thor, joined today, as always, by my friend and co-host. I think he's turning Japanese. I really think so. It's Micah.
Hi. You go with that. I was really expecting George Harrison.
While your guitar gently weeps?
Yeah.
That'd probably be more appropriate and also less culturally and racially insensitive.
Yeah, so why pick that?
But, I don't know. It's just just a random song popped in my head.
That's one of those songs that you would listen to the chorus at 3 a.m. on the morning when they were selling those big, like, mixed disc discographies of all the 80s.
Dude, that's actually I really enjoy that song.
I only know that song because of those 3 a.m.
There's just this one,
promos.
There's this part, I think it's a guitar part, but he's like, during the chorus, I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. I love that.
So,
yeah, I think that's kind of part of, like, the synth pop new wave genre era, I guess.
What is that song about? Because that's one of those songs that you would talk about in middle school, and people were like, it's about masturbating, because you're turning Japanese because you're squinting your eyes.
Oh, I always assumed it was, I'm turning Japanese because you're so stoned.
That's kind of that's the other argument that I've heard. Yeah.
Either that or it's neither of them. It's just a guy making fun of Asian people. I don't know. I honestly, I don't know any of the words of that song aside from the chorus. I don't think anybody does.
I'm pretty sure the singers don't either.
Probably not. No. How could you?
Yeah. They're Japanese now. They don't speak English anymore. Yeah, that's a good song. Well, at least the chorus that I've heard, like that. I haven't even heard this chorus. It's like a 20-second snippet.
Yeah.
And then right after that is Whitesnake. Like, my brain just puts Whitesnake, is this love, going right into it afterwards. Yeah. So I miss those days. Yeah. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. We have two vehicles. One of them, it just stopped work. It stopped starting, and there's some circuit or something in the shifter that wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. So it drained the battery and killed the battery. And so it's been in the shop for like a week or two, and it's going to be another 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
So I was driving the old Honda Civic, which we've had for like 12 years, has like 200 some odd thousand miles on it. It's a real piece of shit, but I love that car. It just goes and goes and goes.
It goes and goes.
It has so many good memories attached to it. I mean, it's beat. This thing is dinged up, though. But so I fired somebody on Monday.
Sounds like fun.
That was cool.
Yeah.
She didn't see it coming. And I mean, you know, it was one of those, like, she didn't really see it coming. But it was like she messed up with something. So then the owner went and was watching the cameras to see what she was doing. And then he found a bunch of other stuff and was like, okay, she's gotta go.
Ooh, okay.
So we let her go, and then I came into work on Tuesday. Everything is cool. About 3 hours into my day, one of my other employees comes out and is like, hey Thor, your window's broken. And I'm like, what? So I go out and my window of my car is smashed out.
Oh my gosh.
And nothing was stolen, so I know it wasn't somebody trying to rob me. Also, all they would have gotten, all they could have stolen out of the car was a car seat or some baby toys.
Also, like, it's an old Honda Civic.
Yeah.
I don't think many people would walk past it and go, I bet they got a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, with a cracked mirror and just.
So you're pretty sure that the offended ex-employee smashed in the window.
Yeah, it's really the only thing that makes sense. So
gotcha.
That was cool. Which that's just, I mean, you know, that's just, I've never had that happen. I worked with somebody a number of years ago, and she wasn't even the person who fired the guy. She was just one of his supervisors, and they just didn't particularly get along. So after he did get fired, he thought it was because of her. So he came and like slashed her tires in the parking lot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I've know these things have possibly happened, but like nothing like that has ever happened. Like I'm a pretty like easy boss to work for.
Sure.
You know, and I invest a lot in my people. And usually when I fire people, they get it. So I've had multiple, like, I'll have employees, I fire them, and then I'll see them, like, later, like, a couple weeks later, and be like, hey, how are you doing? And we're still totally cool. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I've never really had that many issues. So this is the first time anything like that has happened.
Gotcha.
Where I don't have any proof it was this person, but, I mean...
Do you think...
What are the chances that I fire this person, they are very upset about it, didn't see it coming, and then the next day my window just randomly gets smashed out?
Yeah. Do you think the next day... As she was smashing your window out, she was like, bitch, don't see this coming. You think she was doing that?
Probably. I was nice to her. I was like, look, I'm sorry it went this way. And look, I'll give you a good reference. I mean, that's the best I can do for you. But
sure.
Like, I honestly, like, I didn't want to fire her, but I was, you know what I mean? My hands were tied. I was like, look, I got to let you go.
Yeah.
But apparently she didn't see it that way. I guess she thought I was like, I'm just the guy who has to fire you. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, I get that.
I would have gave her another shot, but it was like, no, you got to do it. Okay.
Yeah, I find when you give people, when you're in situations like that, in this case, I don't mean a peer-to-peer situation, but where you are over somebody as a supervisor role, or often the case that I'm referencing is like a teacher to student.
Yeah, sure.
If you give them a second chance, it often works out well.
Yeah, typically.
In those situations.
Yeah, no, some of my best employees of all time were ones who, like, were people who in the beginning were not that great. And, like, we, you know, just through, you know, figuring out, like, how do you get the best out of this person? And just showing them, like, hey, just because you mess up, you know, I'll give you a chance to redeem yourself. That builds so much, like, trust with people. And
sure.
I've had a lot of success with that, so... This was just one of those situations where I just couldn't do that. And that, you know, I was kind of bummed about it anyway. Like, I usually don't feel that bad if I got to, like, fire somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things you just kind of get used to it, you know. So I don't typically feel bad about it. This time I did feel bad about it where I was like, ah, man, I really feel like we could have, you know, worked through some of these things. But whatever. I stopped feeling bad 12 hours later.
Yeah, I have had to fire people when I was a manager at Blockbuster. In fact, I was the person to fire people. I was never the person to decide that somebody got fired. But my boss would come to me and he'd be like, hey, Micah, this person's got to let him. You got to let him go. So I scheduled them to work with you on Thursday and I want you to fire them at the end of the shift. Like,
that's really shitty too. That's funny.
It's basically how he did it. He goes, I feel like you're really good with people. He goes, you got a really nice voice, really soft tone. You can let them down nicely. So it's going to come better from you than it is from me. And my boss, my boss was like an old ex-military dude who was really regimented.
Yeah.
In all of his, like, he was a little rough around the edges. Very nice guy. Like, I adored him. He was great. But yeah, so I was the person that was firing people.
Yeah, you get used to it pretty quick. Yeah.
You do. Yeah.
You
yeah.
Really
by
do,
like
yeah.
the third one, I'm like, all right, this is,
yeah,
this is fine.
Yeah. I think it's because we're psychopaths. We just cut ourselves off. It's like, oh, you know, it's actually really easy to compartmentalize and cut myself off from human emotions and empathy.
Yeah, super easy. Barely an inconvenience. Yeah. All right. Ooh. Man, well, I'm excited for this conversation. I kind of sprung this recommendation on a whim.
Yeah, and I think
episode.
On yourself, not just on me, on yourself. you just pulled it out of your
I really
out of
the did.
Hat.
You know, there's an old Family Guy skit where Peter Griffin is trying to give somebody a fake name. And he's like, oh, and he starts looking around and he sees like a P on a plate and he's like, P, and then he looks somewhere else and
somebody's crying.
Yeah, somebody's
Tear.
And then he looks up in the sky and there's a griffin flying. It's like Peter Griffin.
Yeah, I'm pretty. That's like a reference to a movie too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's Kaiser Sose. I don't know what that movie is. I know Kaiser Sose. I get the reference. I don't even know what the movie is.
Oh my gosh. Fantastic.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, save it.
Okay, I am. Yep.
Write yourself a note.
I don't even need to.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry, that totally made me lose track. But anyway, when you were like, yeah, it's your turn to do a recommendation, I literally just like sat back and I'm like, and as I look to my left, I see a whole bunch of movies just stacked over there. Yeah. And I saw Kubo and the Two Strings. And I'm like, how about Kubo and the Two Strings? So
worked out.
Yeah. So that's what we're gonna get into. Are you ready to discuss it?
Let's do it. All right. Hey folks, make sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by following us at Get Wrecked Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any recommendations you'd like to hear us review on the show, you can contact us directly via email. Or, I don't know, maybe you just want to send us some feet pics. You creep, I don't know what you're into. I don't care. We'll review those too. What do you think of that, huh? In any case, all your requests, feedback, and general criticism of the straight white patriarchy can be sent to getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, folks. So today we are going to be talking about Kubo and the Two Strings. This is a 2016 American animated action fantasy film produced by a studio named Laika. I'm pretty sure it's Laika. It's L-A-I-K-A. It might be Laika. I don't know. It's one of those names that I'm not 100%
Laika sure. Laika Virgin. Yeah, no, I like Laika.
Yeah. It was directed by Travis Knight. And this is the story about a kid named Kubo. It's got a very, I would say a very Japanese-inspired type of mythos behind it, where he is the grandson of the Moon King. All you're told is that the Moon King stole his eye. His father was a great samurai, and his mother was some type of amazing, like, witch or mage of some sort.
Moon sorceress.
Yeah. And so it's the tale of this kid, and this came out in 2016. We're going to be talking about the movie. If you haven't seen this, I would really, really recommend watching this one. It's a stop-motion animation. Fun fact, it's the longest stop-motion animation ever. The record was beat by 1 minute. It beat Coraline, which this studio also produced.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar with stop-motion animation, think probably the most famous one at this point
is... James and the Giant Peach.
Not that at all. Nightmare Before Christmas is what I was going for, but James and the Giant Peach is a stop-motion.
For me, that is the pinnacle of stop-motion film.
You know, the thing about that movie, when they're in the peach... And they're like, we're so hungry. We don't have any food. And then they realize that they're in a peach and they can just eat the peach. That, as a kid, looked really tasty. I don't know if it did to you, but when they were like eating the peach and drinking it, everything, I'm like, I want to try peach everything right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I would not want to live in a peach.
No, you'd be so sticky.
So sticky.
Yeah.
That's, all day.
You'd be so sticky. Ugh. Yeah, you would not be able to.
And honestly, peach is a low tier fruit.
Okay, you might be right about that. I really
like C tier at best.
I would say C tier. Yeah, I would say C tier. That's a good level for fruit. We might have to make a tier list of fruit now.
I'm into this. Yeah,
because you've got that giant freaking pit in the middle of it. And also the outside of it's kind of fuzzy and awful.
Yeah.
Like the inside's nice. I like the inside. But I don't really care for the outside or like the core of a peach. Also, I hate fake peach things. So like those peach rings or peach flavored anything, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, except for, so people in like the Northeast America will get this reference, but there's a place called Rita's Italian Ice.
Yeah.
Italian Ice, if you're, like my mom, the way she says Italian.
Italians.
Italian. So Rita's Italian Ice. they have a peach flavored Italian Ice. It'll blow your balls off.
Oh, yeah?
It's called Sweet Georgia Peach, and whew, it's that is an S-tier Italian Ice.
Interesting. That's I've seen that at Rita's. I'm not a very big Rita's guy, but my wife is.
That's my second choice.
Oh, yeah?
Pear goes number one. Sweet Georgia Peach is number two.
Those are two very interesting picks, Thor. I think... Yeah, I don't normally get an Italian Ice. I'm just not a Rita's person. We go there, Ashley gets something, and then we leave.
And you're like, do you guys sell like sunflowers or like popcorn?
You got coffee? Coffee or popcorn, I'll take either of those.
The 12-year-old working behind the counter is like, this asshole. Get a gelato with some sprinkles, you piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but... Yeah, so the story of this, just to run through the plot very, very briefly, it takes place in feudal Japan. Kubo is a 12-year-old boy. He has one eye, and he tends to his mother, living in a cave near a village. He makes money basically by going to town, and he's got the magical ability to play this kind of guitar instrument. It's called a shamisen. It's an old Japanese instrument. So imagine a guitar, but it only has three strings.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lute.
Yeah. So he plays that, and through playing that, he has the ability to control things.
Paper. He's a paper bender.
He's a paper bender.
Yeah, he uses his magic to do origami, which is pretty cool.
It is kind of cool. Yeah, he does use it for more things, but that's definitely how they introduce it. So he basically walks into the middle of the town, throws down a stack of paper, and just goes to let people know that he's getting ready to put on a show.
Yeah, he busks for a living through, which it's like the worst superpower of all time. It's like, oh, what do? I fly. What do you do? I run faster than the speed of light. What do? Origami?
Origami? But with my mind. Yeah. So the catch, though, is that he always has to be back by nightfall. He's always got to be back by nightfall. And
else the Moon King will track him down and
find him.
And take his other eye.
Take his other eye. Yep. So... he ends up going to, I don't know what the actual name of it is, but it's something akin to a Day of the Dead ceremony where you honor your ancestors. And he goes to light a lantern for his father. And he's out past dusk, and his aunts show up. And it kind of goes from there. So he ends up having to go on this big, big travel, big journey, getting these mythical pieces of armor and facing off against his evil grandfather, the Moon King. That's kind of the gist of the story. So with all of that, Thor, what are your thoughts on this thing?
I immediately understood. There was a couple of moments where I really understood why you liked this movie so much.
Oh, yeah?
The animation is incredible. And I know it's stop motion, but it also uses a bit of CGI and as well.
A little bit, I assume. A little bit, yeah.
But, I mean, just visually, it's kind of astonishing what they accomplished with this. I mean, it is... There are a number of scenes where you know it's stop motion, and you're like, it looks drawn. It doesn't make sense how... Like just how graceful and elegant all of the actual movement and how dynamic it all feels.
Yeah.
So I assume that was probably what really drew you to this. Also, the story is cool. It's kind of dark.
It is.
For being, I would hesitate to just call this a kid's movie. It's definitely a film. It's definitely a family film geared towards like, hey, a kid can watch this. I think the naughtiest word they say is hell at one point, and it feels like, you when it hits, you're like, oh gosh, like
sure.
It definitely. So it's definitely, you know, family friendly. I would hesitate to call it a kids movie though, because I mean, there's a lot of like really like deep emotional stuff going on and some really dark stuff. Like he has this mom who's kind of has like dementia. You know what I mean? She's like, in the beginning, she's like really weird and out of it. Like her memories are starting to fade. And it's like, it's kind of like a really dark tale. He has to take care of his insane mom in this cave.
Yeah.
And in the daytime, he has to go out and make money by playing on the streets. And he's terrified of going out at night because his grandfather's going to come and steal his other eye. What yeah, the hell? On top of the fact that his grandfather wants to steal his eye and his aunts, his mother's sisters, are like these two evil, like craven witches.
Yeah.
The whole thing is incredibly like dark.
Yeah, I was surprised with that the first time that I watched it.
So, no, I think it's really cool. And there are a couple scenes that I think are, like I said, just visually are astonishing. Frankly, and it's just it's a fun movie. It's short. It's a kids movie. I know it's the longest stop motion film,
yeah.
But still in the, it's not fucking Summer of the Flower Moon or whatever.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Have
that
you
just
seen
came
that?
Out. We started to watch it and okay. Then the baby was restless or something. So I saw like the first 20 minutes of it. I actually really want to watch it. I kind of forgot about it till just now.
Yeah, I really want to watch it too. I just know that it's, I think, 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And so I know that I've got a set. Like, that's something you got to plan for.
Yeah.
That's not a...
Yeah. So this is not that. It's, you know, it's a quick ride. The story... I really enjoy the way the story keeps a really good pace.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something happening, and it really just gets through... It really gets through the plot swiftly and concisely.
Sure.
It doesn't feel like there was a ton they could have added to it that wouldn't have been extraneous.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Something that the director said about this was, since it's stop motion, like the way that he described it is, you have to be so disciplined in making this movie because, and this company Leica, they're an independent company, so they're not backed by a major studio or a major company like Warner Brothers or Disney or anything like that. So stop motion is pretty expensive to make because they have to make everything by hand. And something that he said too, he goes, if we want two different studios to be working on this at the same time, we have to have two different models of, like, Kubo, for example. And he goes, if it's 3D, if it's digital artwork, then we can just send the file over to the other studio.
Yeah, it's but, perfect.
Yeah, but we can't do that with this. Like, you have to have two models. You have to remake everything so that it matches 100%. So the cost of it is such where you can't really afford to be 2 years into the movie and then have to redo things.
Yeah.
So what you said about the story feeling, like, very concise and... That's because he said that the first 2.5 years of this movie was literally just the plot.
Probably plot and storyboarding,
yeah.
Like visually what it's going to look like.
Yeah. So before they even started filming at all, it was a couple of years of just figuring all of that out.
You know, it's almost like there's a lesson that regular movie studios could take from this.
Sure. Yeah.
Like... I don't know any number of the recent like Star Wars or Marvel
yeah.
or DC films
yep.
that like just get killed by constant fucking reshoots and changing plots in the middle of it's yeah. You know what I mean?
You'd think, right? Yeah, you would think, but yeah, and that's how smaller studios like this are able to make these things. I mean, I don't know how small they are, but I'm going to say compared to Warner Brothers and compared to Disney, they're probably pretty fucking small.
Yeah. And so the person who, Knight, what's the first name? Eric.
Oh, the director?
Philip.
The
Michael.
Travis.
Travis.
Yeah, you were close.
Bunch of white guy names.
Yeah.
I was going to hit it eventually.
You were gonna get it
eventually. I would have got Travis eventually. is there any, you said he worked on Coraline as well?
So this is his directorial debut.
Okay.
So he directed this. He did other film like roles, but this was his first shot directing.
Stop motion.
Yeah.
Film.
Now this company did Coraline.
Okay.
Yeah, this company made Coraline.
I was curious if they had did any of the other... Sorry. That's my alarm to take my medication, and I'm not at home, so... Uh-oh, I'm gonna die on the podcast. Okay. I was just curious if they had... What other stop-motion films have they done?
That is a good question. let's see if we can find... Let's see if we can find some.
Because it's such, like, a niche kind of...
Sure.
I think
that they did Paranorman.
Because I'll be honest with you, anytime I see it, I just assume it was the guy who did James and the Giant Peach. Which, was that Tim Burton?
James and the Giant Peach might have been. Yeah. So they did... This website's awful. They did Missing Link. That one was a recent one. They did Kubo and the Two Strings. They did Box Trolls, which the movie was okay.
I think I remember seeing like a preview for it.
Yeah, the movie was okay. They did do Paranorman, and they did Coraline.
Okay.
So according to their website, that's what they've got. And it looks like they are working on another movie right now, but they're not saying what it is.
Okay.
So... Oh, I think it's called Wildwood. Yep, there it is. Ooh, it looks cool. They got like little stills of it. Looks very cool. I'm excited. Yeah, when I think stop motion, for me, the king of stop motion is, not Jim Henson. It's Wallace and Gromit.
Okay.
Like those 30-minute movies. They've made a couple of actual full-length movies now. But I actually read somewhere that this clay that they use for this is no longer in production, and that the company that makes Wallace and Gromit just bought like a shit ton of that clay.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But yeah. So those are the things that Leica's done. So yeah. Overall thoughts. You seem to enjoy the visual spectacle.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Was there anything that jumped out to you?
Okay, so there's one specific scene.
Okay.
Like I said, so I think a big conversation about this has to be just visually how it looks. I think that's really a big part of, like, just the charm of this movie.
I would agree 100%.
Okay, so it's when they fight the first sister. Because at one point, once he goes out at night, the witches start chasing him. The mom, like, slaps him on the back. He grows wings.
Yeah.
And he just wakes up in... this snow-covered area with this monkey. And he's like, where the fuck am I doing here? Why is there a monkey talking to me?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm the monkey you've been carrying around with you. And it's like, what? But the monkey's pretty badass. Turns out it's actually his mom.
Sure.
But in any case, so the sisters find them. And they're on a ship that, because as Kubo's discovering his power can do more than just origami. His magic. So he makes a ship of leaves. So the beetle, mm-hmm. Beetle is jumping into the sea to go find the armor.
Yep. The beetle named Beetle.
The beetle named Beetle. I don't think he was in the Beatles.
I don't think he might have been the original drummer.
Oh, yeah, he probably was.
Yeah.
And so there's a fight scene between Monkey and... one of the sisters. And there is this moment where the sister, the witch, she cuts a rope so that the sail unfurls.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monkey jumps through it.
Yeah.
And it's so incredible. So it's this super dynamic scene of this crazed monkey jumping through this sail, and there's like a million leaves falling behind it.
Yeah.
And when you consider that every single one of those frames had to be like the fact that they made falling leaves in this frame with the movement of the monkey.
Yeah.
It's I watched it three times because it happened and I was like, holy shit. And I rewinded it.
Yeah.
I was like, it made Kendra watch it again, and then I rewound it and watched it again because I was just so blown away.
Yeah, visually this thing's amazing.
By just that alone. I was like, it was such just a 5 seconds of film.
Mm-hmm.
5 seconds. And one of the like coolest, like most technically impressive things I've seen in any film in a long time.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, and also just to add to that, they're on a moving ocean through this entire thing too.
Yeah.
So all of the stuff, like the water is being manipulated as it's happening too.
Yeah. So not only is the foreground, you know, there's like six different, there's a character moving.
Mm-hmm.
There is a billion leaves falling in the background. There are waves in the further background that are shifting. The ship itself is shifting. It's
so
impressive to say the least.
Yeah. I found an article that kind of talks about that scene specifically. So this is on a website called IndieWire. And let me see if I can find the... So the director, Knight, he goes, "We did this one shot of the boat coursing through the waves on a complex motion control rig with the help of a hexapod, which is similar to a flight simulator, which allowed us to move the boat at any angle to mimic the experience of a raging storm. As a warrior, Monkey was also required to be nimble and flexible, which flew in the face of ordinary stop motion techniques." Because, like, if you look at old Wallace and Gromit animation, mm-hmm. they're pretty stiff as they're walking around,
for sure.
Right? I mean, it's very, very well done, but...
Well, and even those, like I said, I hold James and the Giant Peach at the pinnacle of stop motion.
You're wrong with that.
Same
but
thing
that,
could be said.
Sure.
Nightmare Before Christmas, all of that stuff. It definitely, you can see the difference in, you know, as technology goes along,
sure.
as, you know, just the knowledge of how to make these films comes along. Just the fluidity of it is really impressive.
So this is the part that I think you'll like. So the company took inspiration from live action and built a muscle suit on top of the armature, covered with fluffy hair and fur fabric with combed silicone. Fortunately, the two principal animators had martial arts backgrounds. But it was really challenging because while Monkey fought on the deck of the boat, the sister puppet, comprised of both an armature and a cape made of nearly 500 feathers, floated in the air. So to reach her, the animator was suspended 15 feet high on a scissor lift and then came back down to shoot Monkey.
Wow.
Like, that's so wild, isn't it?
Dude, I love that. I love that so much, too. Because, and not to take anything away from like CGI or anything like that, because I know that's an art and a
sure,
thing
absolutely.
In itself, but the pure like sweat equity that is put into this film.
So much.
That's wild.
So much of it. Yeah. Yeah. One of the scenes that really jumped out to me was early when they met Beetle and they had to fight like this giant skeleton.
Yes, yeah.
All right. So this giant is where they get the sword, actually. The three mythical pieces, I said mythical pieces of armor. It's the helmet.
Well, that's how they refer to it, even though one of them is a sword.
One of them is a sword, yeah. It's a helmet, a chest piece, and a sword. But they have to fight this skeleton that is just this monstrous and scale skeleton. That thing, that skeleton, was a puppet, and it was 16 feet high.
How big were the other models?
Usually models are like 1 to 2 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In my brain, for whatever reason, I'm thinking like they're only a couple inches tall, like little action figures.
Yeah, no, okay. they're like a couple of feet high. So then with that sense of scale as a maybe like a foot high, you know, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
A foot, 18 inches, something like that. But,
16 feet tall.
Yeah. 16 feet tall, dude. And yeah, that's how big the skeleton was. So then think about the scenes where they're in a town. Like, they made that town. That whole town was made. Wild, all right? Just the visual spectacle was amazing. Absolutely amazing. There were times that I was watching this, and I kind of forgot that I was watching stop motion, which has never happened to me before in a movie that is stop motion. Where you're so into it, and the visuals are so good and so fluid that you just buy into the story.
Yeah, especially, so also there's a really great scene. There's a, the funny thing about this is all the scenes where I was like, oh, that's really neat and really impressive how they accomplished it, or mm-hmm. how they, you know, without even knowing how they did, but just knowing they did. It's a lot of times like just simple moments or something, like the leaves falling as she jumps through the sail, right?
Yeah.
There's also a part they're walking through like a desert,
mm-hmm.
and he uses his origami to turn his little origami things into like birds and mosquitoes to like pester Monkey with.
Oh yeah.
And this like origami folding itself from a bird into a mosquito and like a bunch of them all flying around.
Yeah.
Like it's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Super, super cool. Well, cool. I'm glad that you liked that. How did you feel about the plot in general?
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's not the most in-depth plot of all time. Sure. Like there's a couple like twists and turns that you kind of see coming pretty easily.
Yeah.
Because you're an adult and you're not like the target demographic for the story. You know, the story yeah. has to be, you know, kid friendly.
Sure.
But I liked the plot. I felt like it had a lot of like emotional depth to it. For whatever reason, I feel like I don't want to like Matthew McConaughey, but I like him in everything I see him in.
Yeah.
He just seems kind of like a douche. Like, I don't want to like him, but I can't help but love him every time I see him in whatever he does. Like, is he just the coolest guy of all time?
He's pretty cool. Yeah, he's pretty cool. I used to feel the same way about Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, I didn't want to like Brad Pitt.
You know, at first, when he first started talking, when Beatles started talking, I was like, is that Brad Pitt? And then we IMDb'd it, and it's like, oh, no, it's McConaughey. And then as you listen more and more, you hear him a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I do think it's funny, like, to play this samurai warrior. They picked the whitest voice of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Charlize Theron.
They don't have him Japanese it up at all.
Not at all. And Charlize Theron played the mom.
Yeah.
You know who played the Moon King?
Oh, Shao Kahn, right?
No. It was Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who played Voldemort.
Voldemort, right?
Yep. Yep, and he played the main bad guy in Bruges.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, love that guy.
Yeah, what was that scene in Bruges where he's like on the phone?
He beats the shit out of the phone.
He beats the shit out of the phone, and his wife's like, what's wrong? He's like, nothing, honey, it's fine.
Yeah. George Takei was in it, too. He played...
Gosh. Yeah, no, the guy Asato. Who played... is that his name in Mortal Kombat? The bad
yes,
guy in the Mortal
he
Kombat
is in this.
Series.
Yeah. Yeah. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. Or Tagawa. He played somebody named Hashi. I don't know who was named Hashi in the movie.
Yeah, couldn't tell you.
But is this?
But no. I also like I really loved that. It was kind of like this abstract concept almost. Like, you didn't know why he wanted Kubo's eyes,
mm-hmm.
but Kubo's like, I know why you want to take my... Because his whole thing was he wanted Kubo to come live in the heavens with him.
Yeah.
And there's this moment where you always think like, oh, maybe the grandfather isn't that bad. But then Kubo goes, I know why you want to take my eyes. It's so that I can't look people in the eye and see the kindness in them and have empathy for them.
Yeah.
It is like this kind of abstract concept of like, oh, I want to steal. It felt very Elden Ring almost.
Sure.
Where it's like this kind of like almost like cryptic concept of like, I want to steal his eyes from him so that he can't look into the eyes of the common man and
yeah.
feel empathy for him.
And like, they kind of had that as a running theme throughout it, too. Because the sisters were saying that when they were fighting, their sister now as Monkey,
mm-hmm.
One of them said, like, I'll never understand why beings down here fight so hard to stay alive. You know, and they really separated themselves from the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like there's the Moon King. They, if you notice, the sisters never touched the ground. Ever. They were always flying.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Yeah. So, like, in the first scene where Kubo sees them because he's out too late, they kind of like fly across the river.
Yeah.
You know,
they're very creepy.
Oh yeah. They've got these porcelain masks too.
Yeah. I got to tell you something funny. So we were watching this and Kendra was excited when you recommended this to me.
Oh, okay.
She had seen it before and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But we're watching and she's like, Micah recommended this to you? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, really? It's kind of like, I wouldn't think he'd like this. It's so like dark and creepy. She thought, and I was like, yeah, but it's like fantasy. And she's like, yeah, but he doesn't usually like that kind of stuff. Cause you're not into like horror movies. But at first I was like, they're not like worshiping the devil. They're not like that kind of, it's like a fantasy thing. And she's like, no, that's not what I mean. She's like, it's just kind of like dark and creepy. And he's usually not into that. And I'm like, yeah, but it's like, it's not actually like scary. Yeah. But she was very confused. Like, Micah actually likes this.
That's funny. Yeah, dude, man, this movie I thought was great.
Yeah.
This.
Well, and I think that just speaks to how like the dark tones they're able to hit while also keeping it like appropriate for a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I would say that probably the demographic is like 12, 13, kind
probably,
of,
yeah.
You know, 11, somewhere in that range, like an older kid.
I could see this being actually scary for like a little kid.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, those sisters, man, because they had these porcelain masks and they never really walked. They just kind of floated around and had this smoky mist vapor and mm-hmm. they were just like, Kubo. And
yeah,
all creepy,
and I mean, and like their whole purpose, like mom lays it out at one point, is like their purpose is to kill people.
Yeah.
like that's what she was. She was an assassin essentially for her father, the Moon King.
Yeah.
Until she met the mighty warrior. What was his name?
Hanzo. Yeah.
And he bested her and then said, you were my journey or something like that.
Yeah,
really beautiful. Like it's telling, I think that's also why there's what's really good about this is like I said, it's just this really like emotional story. There's so much emotional depth to it for being a kid's movie, which I think a lot of times they can tend to lack some real emotional depth.
Sometimes, yeah.
Because they're playing too much to like a kid audience. I think,
sure.
And certainly not always. I think like movies like Shrek kind of show that you can make a film that's truly any person of any age can enjoy and find something good in.
Yeah.
This is kind of in that similar boat where it like, it hits some really good emotional depth. And there are some really like beautiful moments and it's telling a really beautiful love story between Hanzo and mother.
Yeah.
As well as Kubo.
Yeah. It's
kind of like Romeo and Juliet, esque.
Kind of. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, because she definitely betrayed her family to
yeah,
to,
if
to
Romeo
be with
and Juliet had a kid and then the father of the Capulets tried to steal his eye. And
yeah. Shakespeare should write that.
He should, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. Man. All right, well, do you have anything else, like, major about this that you'd want to cover before we
Oh,
move
the
on?
Soundtrack is fucking incredible,
oh,
obviously.
Yeah.
Because
the soundtrack is amazing!
Because Kubo, the whole thing is Kubo's magic comes from him playing music.
Yeah.
Which I fucking love. You know? So usually, and you know this from doing the show with me, is like I oftentimes don't necessarily like really take note of soundtrack.
Sure.
With a film like with this film, you can't not do that. It's such an integral part of not only the film, just like it's one of the drivers of the plot.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was so good. It was so good.
And it's so unique because it's, you know, it's this really Eastern inspired music,
mm-hmm.
Also with kind of like a modern Western take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like a ton of songs. We're like sing songs.
Yeah, this isn't a musical, right?
No, yeah. Not at all. It's just some really good score driven scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. There was a cover of George Harrison's As My Guitar Gently Weeps that was done by Regina Spektor at the end of this. So that's who was doing that.
Okay. She's incredible.
Yeah. Right. Solid stuff. Yeah. Good soundtrack. Amazing animation. I think probably the story is, in my opinion, I'm going to say the weakest part. of this movie as a whole. But that doesn't mean that I think that the story is weak. I just think that the visual spectacle is so good, the soundtrack is so good, that that's why you want to see this movie. The story is solid.
Yeah.
I think it's solid. I would agree with you. There's nothing like super, super amazing, new, you know, groundbreaking.
There's some predictable twists.
Yeah. But this is...
It's very forgivable.
Yeah, 100%. So, cool. Well, Thor, in that case, on a scale of 1, 2, 3, 4, you know what? On a scale of 6 eyeballs.
We didn't even talk about the weird eyeball monster.
Oh, yeah.
Why 6 eyeballs?
Because I'm looking at the cover right now, and there's 3 main characters. So, oh, you know what? Sorry. 5. 5 eyeballs.
Yeah, okay.
I forgot Kubo only has 1 eye. Yeah. 5, yeah.
I do think it's hilarious, too. He just wears his hair over his missing eye.
Sure. It gives him the perfect justification.
It gives him a depressing emo haircut to, like, kind of go with his depressing emo character.
Yeah, love it.
Like, well, he's not a depressing emo character. He has a depressing emo backstory.
Yes.
So it does fit very well. Okay, so scale 1 to 5 eyeballs.
Uh-huh.
I'll probably go, like, 4, I think. Yeah. Yeah, because it's not one of my favorite movies of all time. I don't have anything... you know, I'll give it 5, actually.
Oh, man.
I'll give it 5. I'll give it the perfect score because I think for what this is,
yeah,
I think it's a family film, it's an adventure film, it's a stop motion film, and it does all of those things perfect.
Yeah.
It's a fun watch. It's a like an hour and a half, hour 45, maybe.
Hour 41, yep.
Yeah. So it zips through the plot. Mm-hmm. It keeps you engaged. It's absolutely beautiful. There wasn't a moment where I was like, let's get through this.
Sure.
Or I didn't care for that. I mean, I think it's perfect for what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a pretty generous score. It's not my favorite film of all time.
Right.
But I would happily watch this again and would recommend it to anybody, especially if you have kids.
Yeah.
This is one where, like, you could watch it with them and also be entertained.
That's a good way to put it, exactly
what you want from a family film. I would put this up there with Shrek.
Yeah. I put this on for Freya to watch after I recommended it to you. And we watched it twice.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, she enjoyed it. This movie didn't do as well as their other movies had done.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So it had an estimated budget of $60 million, which is that's a budget. That's a decent amount of money. It did make 76 and a quarter, so it was profitable, but I think compared to Coraline, because this came out after Coraline did, and I think compared to Coraline, it didn't do as well. But Coraline was kind of spooky too, now that I'm thinking about it. And you know, Box Trolls was kind of, I don't know if it was spooky, but it was out there.
Because Coraline was kind of like... I feel like it definitely had that like spooky vibe. It definitely had a Nightmare Before Christmas vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it probably rode a lot of that.
Sure.
Why people really liked it. It was kind of like a spiritual successor to that film.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, but just based on the look of it, I would guess it's similar to that in some ways.
Yeah. So Coraline made...
I don't know. She was like a zombie girl or something like that, right? Or like a girl that died.
She had parents who were both very into their work, not really into being a parent at all. And so she found a way to go into this alternate dimension where her parents were there, but they had buttons for eyes and they were like the best parents in the world. But it turns out they're evil.
Okay.
So that's the gist of Coraline.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm just saying what I was getting at, though, is I can see this feels like this is probably a tougher sell for people. Like it doesn't have like as much of an obvious market like Nightmare Before. It kind of makes sense to me that people would be less willing to go see this versus being willing to go see Coraline.
Yeah.
Whereas you could be like, oh, I love Nightmare Before Christmas. This looks kind of similar. I'll take my kids to go see this. Whereas if you look at Kubo, you're like, that's like a weird fantasy movie and he's playing a weird guitar thing. Like, I don't know. It just, it kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well, it must make sense to a bunch of people because while Kubo made $76 million, Coraline made $131.
Okay.
So Coraline was much more successful as a film. But I personally like this one more than Coraline, for what that's worth. So there you have it, folks. 5 out of 5 eyeballs trying to keep them from the Moon King. What are your guys' thoughts? Have you seen this? I would really like to hear from those in Japan specifically. How true to the culture of Japan is this? Were the mythos and things pulled from this inspired heavily from Japan? Reach out to us. Let us know. In fact, Thor, I made a survey at the request of one of our listeners of like making a survey so that people could go online and very quickly send us recommendations. I think we can put that in like the Instagram profile and like all of our social media profiles and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And is that something that we could put on Spotify or no?
You know, I don't know. Well, actually, I don't. And I even said for sure on the other. I don't know for sure. We'll figure it out, though.
Okay. So, yeah. So we're going to figure that out. It may or may not be up there by the time you listen to this. But you know what is going to be up there? You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Threads for some reason. You can find us on Facebook, I guess. And you can also send us an email at our email address if you don't want to do any of that. It's getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Yeah, so with that, Thor, what are we getting into next week?
I got something interesting for you.
Okay.
Okay, so it's kind of a music recommendation. It's definitely a music recommendation.
Okay.
But it's also a video recommendation. So, okay, so there's this band called The Arcadian Wild.
Okay.
They are kind of like a modern roots revival band. So think like bluegrass, Nickel Creek, Punch Brothers.
I love some Nickel Creek.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like modern bluegrass. I wouldn't call them bluegrass, though. I think like roots revival or something would probably be more accurate. So in 2020, they did a Kickstarter and they basically, they created a 4-track EP. So it's a 4-song EP. But it's also a kind of a short film project.
Hmm.
So it's 4 songs. Each one of those songs has a accompanying music video.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a concept album.
Oh, okay.
It's essentially 4 movements.
Okay.
Is how they describe it. And so it takes place, the first song, represents spring. The second song represents summer. The third fall, the fourth winter.
Okay.
So it's a 4-song EP. You can find all of the videos on YouTube. And the entire project is called Principium.
Principium.
So the Arcadian Wild Principium. It's 4 songs, 4 music videos to watch.
Okay.
So it's an easy one to get through.
Sure.
But I find it's very neat. And I think you might be surprised as we dig into some of the stuff about it, too.
Okay.
So I think you'll really enjoy it. And also, it's an interesting story of the thing itself.
Very cool. Okay. So Arcadian Rhythms EP.
The Arcadian Wild.
Oh, The Arcadian Wild. Don't listen to me at all. I don't know where Arcadian Rhythm came from.
The Arcadian Wild, Principium, and each one is labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. So you can just find the videos on YouTube.
Sure.
And watch those.
Okay. So that's what we're going to get into next week. Thor, thanks a lot for being here. Really appreciate your time. And I guess that's it. Yeah. So until next time, folks.
As always.
You get wrecked out there.
And stay wrecked.
Yeah. I want to buy one of those guitars that he's got. The shillelagh? Is that what it is?
I think a shillelagh is a club that you beat immigrants with.
Okay,
if you're Irish.
Okay.